this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Oh, my gosh. It's an emergency podcast. C-Rod Fred here with the great Kevin Anderson. Kevin, I've lost my ability to do an intro after these past 2 weeks. How you doing, my friend?
Is it because you just don't have the heart and spirit, Fred? Is that what the problem is?
I kind of feel like Luke, after he got his hand cut off and was hanging upside down in Cloud City, just started, you know, hanging on for his life and started calling out mentally to family members. That's where I feel like I'm at. I don't even know what to say. It's such a feeling of despair, sadness, and almost like shock. I think shock is probably the best word for it, because I think you would concur. We did not expect this team to be 1-4 at this point.
No, and I wish I could say I was going to be your Leia and Lando and the Millennium Falcon come to get you off Cloud City. But like I'm kind of like there with you. I am like honestly beside myself about this team starting 1-4. Like I thought worst case scenario entering this season they were going to be 3-2 after 5 games, and I thought it was like likely they were going to be 4-1. After 5 games. I'm just completely kind of blown away by where they are right now as a team, and it's not just one thing. There's a half dozen issues with this team right now, and it's like time is a flat circle. Here we go again. Like, it's just like last year, and like, you're not seeing that change. It feels like last season, again, it's only 5 games, but my God, it's a tough way to start.
Yeah, you know, so to me it doesn't feel like last season. That's what I find so frustrating about it is, you know, you take a step back, they had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter against Charlotte, they blew it. They had a big lead against the 18-point lead at one point against the Knicks, they blew it. Tonight, you know, they were leading for the vast majority of the game, they blew it. It's like, it really, to me, comes down to like two things. It's they're not hitting their open threes. Their best shooters before tonight were shooting 23% from three or worse. And, you know, I didn't feel that could continue. It kind of continued again today. And then also, just, I don't know what's up with Levine and Markkanen, but it's really disturbing because they've both taken a step back. And I don't know what it is. And I don't like the answers I'm hearing either. I don't know if you agree with that assessment.
Yeah, I don't like what I'm hearing from really anybody in terms of like the conversation, the post-game sound, the pre-game sound, the shoot-around sound, the practice sound. And I'm not liking what I'm seeing on the court in like mannerisms and body language. And like the thing is, they certainly not just like talking about entering the season before one, but they could right now, looking back, have they held the lead and played in the fourth quarter like they had played in other parts of those individual games, they could be 4-1.
Yes.
I mean, you know, they had a 10-point lead over Charlotte with 6 minutes left. Blew it. They had a lead against the Knicks. My God, what was it, 18 in the first quarter, and they had a lead late in the game. Was it up by 8, I think, 6 or 8 with you know, under 3 minutes left? And then certainly on Monday night, as we're recording there, Wednesday night rather, recording the podcast against Cleveland, it's a very winnable game. And so, like, it's tough. It's tough to swallow where, like, why are they collapsing? Why are they not executing? And I think the answer is complicated. And I think there's a multitude of reasons that it's occurring. But they aren't as bad as it feels right now.
Yes.
But my God, Fred, it feels really bad being 1-4 at this point.
So let's get into some. Let's try to identify some of those problems. I want to start out with this, though. Like, I love the post-game, the pre-game show, Bulls Outsiders. I mean, those are my three top favorite TV shows to watch. But the answers I'm hearing, that's what I find so frustrating, is I usually agree with the commentators on those shows, and I couldn't be more in disagreement with these people who I love. Let's start with Kendall. Kendall wants to go back to like the December offense and go post play and mid range jumpers. I mean, are we kidding? Is he kidding me? Every time I'm watching the show, I want to pick up the TV and throw it through the window. I'm like, Kendall, what are you talking about? That's not the issue. Will Perdue is ridiculing a lineup of Young, Dunn, White, and Wendell Carter Jr. hey, regardless of how you feel about those four, those are our four best defenders. Defense is a major problem from this team. And that lineup specifically got us back in the Charlotte game. They won us the Memphis game. And, you know, it's like, I don't think the diagnosis of the problem from any of these guys. And then John tonight in Bulls Outsiders was like, Zach needs a, we need to give more Zach hero ball time. What? Zach LaVine has been awful down the stretch of these games. He should not be playing hero ball. He's been terrible in the last 7 minutes. So, like, everything I'm hearing, I'm disagreeing with, but I don't think I have any better answers either. Do you concur with those three?
So, there's a lot to unpack there. First, let's start with Will and Kendall, who are good friends of mine. I have worked with and known Kendall for 15 years, and I completely disagree with Kendall's assertion that the issue with this team is the offense and the style of play that they're running. Kendall believes that they are taking too many threes and that they've gotten away from too much post play, and they need to have more mid-range shots and they need to run more in the post. To a certain extent, he is right. There were several instances on Wednesday night against the Cavs in which, like Markkanen, I think Laurie, I think there was another situation with Dunn, had the ball 5 feet and in, and they passed it out for a three instead of taking a shot that was essentially 5 feet and in. And I agree with him in those situations. However, the overall point of KG saying that analytics is bad and they're taking too many threes, I haven't seen that. That, to me, that's not the issue with this offense right now. Like, they are getting good looks.
Agreed.
Laurie and Otto and Cornette have gotten great looks this season.
Sotto.
At three. And
Sotto, too.
Yes.
Those are four big
100%.
Guys.
And they've gotten great looks. And so the issue, to me, is not the offensive scheme. The issue is how they're just not flat out having a majority of guys in a slump at the same time. It's kind of like in baseball where, like, your 1-4 hitters all simultaneously go into a slump, you're not going to score runs. Well, in this instance with the Bulls, when your perimeter shooters all simultaneously go into a slump, you're just not going to score points as much as you were expecting. And so a lot of their struggles right now are with them just flat out missing open shots. Like, the thing is, like, let's specifically talk about marketing right now.
Mm-hmm.
He was 2-6, which is 33. Average to below average, you know, 33%
below,
from three.
Yes. Yep.
On Wednesday night. He's a career 36% three-point shooter, so it's below his career average there. But overall this season, he's been horrible from three. I mean, that's been evident if anybody's watched all five games. However, Laurie is not taking contested shots at three and missing them. He's taking open shots and missing them.
Yes.
And so it's clearly, like, what's happening is teams are double-teaming Zach. They're running at Zach, and they're leaving Laurie open because they're essentially daring him to hit the three, and he's missing so many of those. And so, like, I don't think that's going to continue all season long. I don't think all of a sudden Laurie has become a 25% or 20% three-point shooter. I think he's just in a slump right now. And so the same thing's happening to Otto, and the same thing has happened to Cornette prior to the Cavs game. Cornette actually, you know, was a little bit better. It was 1-2 from three. Certainly is not great in terms of the volume. But the reasons on offense that I disagree with Kendall is I think the scheme is working, and this is where the league is right now.
Yes.
You look at what, as you and I have talked about, the top five teams in the league in three-pointers made are all playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not a coincidence. And the Bulls roster right now, what they did in the offseason was to go out and really help Zach out and to find guys who can fit in certain roles and to strengthen the bench and get three-point shooting in there. And so it just hasn't worked out in terms of them hitting those shots. But, to say that a 17-footer is a better shot than a 22-footer makes no sense to me. The ball don't lie, the math don't lie, right? Like, in terms of analytics, the analytics are correct in that sense. And so I disagree with them on that aspect. And you brought up, like, I do disagree with you on the aspect that it is Zach struggling in late and close games. I don't think he's been horrible. I would believe that be an overstatement. He has made some good shots down the stretches of games. The issue is that they are just not executing their offense very good down the stretch. There's been, I think, a little too much hero ball at times, and they're not really running the offense they are for the first 44 minutes of a game. And it seems like getting those last 4 minutes and they tent up a little bit. I think that comes with being a young team, and that is part of learning. But Zach isn't the issue to me right now. Like, Zach's struggles to me are based more on his teammates struggling than him struggling.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree offensively. Defensively, I think Zach has been a total disaster. I mean, there's something we teach our kids in the fifth grade. It's called cowboy. When your defender's on the weak side, the ball's on the strong side, and you get on the helpline and you use your peripheral vision to see the ball and your man. He consistently over his career, and this year it hasn't gotten any better, loses sight of his man on the weak side, and often that guy ends up either, you know, scoring with a dunk or just getting completely out of position. And it's got to stop. It's like, that is something that's basic that grade schoolers know. I don't understand. It happened again tonight, cost him a huge basket. It happened against Toronto. It happens every game. His off-ball defense is just a joke. And, you know, I can say for certain in that Toronto game, he was a major reason the Bulls went from up 36-33 to down 48-40 at halftime. And, you know, that doesn't always show up. But defensively, he's not bringing it. And, you know, he's jumping passing lanes a little bit better, but he still is a major problem on that side. So, you know, I agree with you, what you say offensively. I'm concerned about Laurie's health. Like, he doesn't even look energetic. I'm concerned. Yeah. Is there something wrong with him? Is this like a continuation of what we saw at the end of last season, which cut his season short? I've been in the car several times for these games, and I can't tell you how many times Chuck Swirsky has mentioned how tired he looks. Do you think that could be it? Is that a problem?
Well, so the thing is, I would say yes if he, in all five games, was like that. But as you know, the season opener against Charlotte, Laurie had 35-17. And yeah, he looked fantastic in that game. Like, ironically, he still wasn't hitting his three-point shot. Like, he still really struggled in that game from three. However, he got the majority of his points at the rim. Like, he was playing great with the ball driving, was playing great in the transition game, was playing great off the ball and cutting and the teammates making the right pass and him making good shots. Like, he was great in that game. I mean, like, he was 1-for-7 from three in that game. And so he had the majority of his 35 points either at the free throw line, 8 of 10, or in the paint. And so he looked good in that game. He looked athletic. He looked energetic. Something changed since that game, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a confidence issue, if it's that the perimeter shooting got to him, and he felt like he just needed to shoot his way, you know, pull like a John Starks and shoot his way out of the slump, and he just keeps in the slump. But, like, I don't know really what the reason is with Laurie struggling so much. I mean, he is, look at his line. He, in the last four games, 4 of 12 shooting, 5 of 13 shooting, 3 of 10, 4 of 15. I mean, that is bad. That is really bad. Really? And like I'm starting to be concerned, really concerned about Laurie Markkanen and the player. Like, and I tweeted this out earlier on Wednesday, and like, my biggest fear is, what if instead of the next Dirk Nowitzki, Laurie is just really the next Danilo Gallinari? And that is not the knock on Danilo. Danilo Gallinari is
a good player. Yeah.
Very good player. He's a good, solid rotation player. He's had a great career in terms of what most draft picks would pray for to have in their career. But with the expectations and hopes we had on Laurie, if he ends up in his career as only Danilo Gallinari, it will be a disappointment to most Bulls fans.
No doubt. He's not an all-star. I mean, you got to make an all-star team once to be, you know, successful. Yeah. Especially when you step back and you look what we did. We traded Jimmy Butler. That's the thing I don't get, is there's still, like, a large swath of the fan base that's like, well, it's still a process. We get our lottery pick. Hold on a second. No. We had Jimmy Butler. We had an all-pro that we traded to jumpstart this rebuild. This idea that everything has to be like the Sixers in a 5 or 6 year process is asinine. No, it doesn't. We gave up Jimmy Butler for him. So, I don't buy that. Like, there should be serious ramifications. I tweeted this. I know everybody thinks I'm nuts. I'm serious. Like, if this is another year where we're in the lottery, like, everybody should go. And no one has been more supportive of John Paxson and what he's done for his organization. But this is a joke. This is ridiculous. I guess let's take another step back because I want your opinion on this. Like, what do you think? Could you give me your top three reasons for why we started so poorly in order what you think they are? I know that it's kind of hard to do because there's so many of them. But if you had to say, what's our biggest problem, number one, what is it? And how would you address it?
Number one, can I go in reverse order and start with number three?
Yep, yeah, let's do that. Sounds good.
Okay, so number three we actually just discussed, so that'll be brief. I think it's the lack of perimeter shooting and the absolute horrific simultaneous slumps that our perimeter shooters are going through right now. So I will put that as the third biggest reason why they are starting the season the way they are. I mean, it's just you look at the numbers and, you know, if they just hit, like if guys hit at their career averages at three, they're probably 4-1. So I would say start with that. Number two to me is Jim Boylan's rotations late in games. I disagree with a lot of the rotations he's played. Let's go back to the Charlotte game. I felt like had he brought in Satoransky sooner in that game in place of Dunn, they would have held on to the lead and they would have won that game. I think that one single decision to keep Dunn in there as long as he did cost the team on offense and ended up costing them the game. And you look at some of the other situations right now, they have gotten killed on the boards. And I mean
yes.
Absolutely destroyed on the boards in the last two games. They have gotten out-rebounded the last two games combined 110-70.
Yes.
I mean, there is something fundamentally wrong if you're getting out-rebounded by 40 total rebounds in two games combined. I mean, that should be like a 10-game stretch if you're a weak rebounding team. Where is Daniel Gafford? Like, this guy is a high-energy rebounding machine. He's not going to hit a 20-footer. He's probably not going to hit a 15-footer. But, my God, he's got value, and I don't care that he's a second-round pick and he's a rookie. Let me see him in there to play some with defense and get some rebounds because they are getting so killed on the boards, and specifically that Knicks game, it was atrocious. I wish we would see Daniel Gafford out there at times, and I think some of the rotation that we're seeing not enough rebounding out there and, you know, too much Cornette in late situations. Cornette is a role player and has value in this league when he's hitting three-point shots, but he's not an interior defender. He's not a rebounder. That's not his role. And so I think the second biggest reason would be Boylan's rotations. I don't think they're working right now. I think he's trying to figure it out, and it's costing the team early. Number one is their defensive schemes. And this is something that Stephen Noe for The Athletic wrote about over the last couple days. I highly recommend you check it out. It's something I'm in complete agreement with him on. I've made Kendall a believer, and he agrees with me on this, that the way they are defending the pick and roll is costing this team dearly on defense because of how everyone is reacting on the back end. And so let me go into that a little bit further. So what they're doing on the pick and roll is on almost every single pick and roll, they're coming out to double team the ball handler. And that, to me, makes sense if it's Steph Curry,
yes,
or Klay Thompson,
yes,
or James Harden, a guy that that is open essentially once he gets past half court and is deadly from anywhere on the floor. That makes sense. Like you have like Steph Curry running the pick and roll with Draymond. You double Steph. Like it absolutely makes sense. But they're doing it against RJ Barrett. They're doing it against everybody out there. They're double teaming the ball handler off the pick and roll. And so what is happening is that the second guy in the pick and roll is flashing down to the paint, and then their rotations are then causing their paint players, their baseline defender, to rotate up, and then everything collapses from there. There were three amazing instances that we showed in the Bulls pregame show on Wednesday from the Knicks game in which specifically Wendell, and this is not Wendell's fault, this is the scheme, this is how he's taught, that essentially Julius Randle was the player in the pick and roll that they would flash down to the paint. Wendell would come up to meet Randall, and the entire defense would collapse and fall to pieces off of that, because Bobby Portis would get wide open for a three, because you're then double teaming the ball handler, and guys aren't rotating quick enough to get in the spots they need to, and you're having the opponents get wide open shots. And so that is the number one reason to me why they're struggling in these games, is because of their defensive scheme, and because whether it's the execution, whether it's the players, I don't know what the correct combination is. I don't know if it's 70% the scheme or 30% the scheme. I can't tell you that, but I can say that their defense is costing them dearly so far, and I want to see it change, and it's really bothering me every time the team runs a pick and roll and we double team the defender for a guy who's not an elite three-point shooter. Like, if it's Steph, if it's Dame Lillard, if it's Kyrie, I get it. If it's R.J. Barrett and Colin Sexton, I do not get it.
You just hit home run all three of those. Let's go back to three for and how, you know, the ways to solve it. Like, shooters aren't shooting. That's going to solve itself. Like, you know, I don't think Otto, Laurie, and Sato, and all these guys are not going to continue to shoot 23% or less under three. So that I think that's, to me, the biggest issue. You know, because they hit two or three more threes in these games, and they're not 28th, 29th, or 30th. I think they're probably 30th now in the league in 3-point percentage. They're 4-1 or 3-1. They just needed to hit a few more, and they're not. So to me, that one will rectify itself. But you touched on the second one, which is the rotations, and it's tied exactly into rebounding. This team has had four straight games of double-digit rebounding deficits. Four straight. I've been following the Bulls a long time. The only way that's possible and you can win games is if you're shooting at an incredibly high percentage, where there's not a lot of rebounds available for your team. If you're shooting at a high percentage, you might be able to get away with that. The way this team is shooting right now, it is impossible to win games getting out double-digit rebounded four straight games. And if this continues, you have to change the personnel. Denzel Valentine, I know, is like a running joke in the fan base. In the last full year...
He led the
point guard, small forwards, and shooting guards in rebounding 2 years ago in his last full season. He's a good rebounder. And I think he also helps address the issue with three-point shooting. Ryan is a great guy. He plays super hard. He's small. He's not big. This isn't that hard. Like, if you switch Gafford and Cornette in the lineup and go a little bit more defense, a little bit better rebounding, and Valentine for Arch, don't you think that might help us move in the right direction in those two areas?
I mean, certainly that is part of it. You know, I don't know what the correct rotation is. Like, if we're going, like, for instance, on Friday, it's fully expected we're going to get Hutchinson back in the rotation, back in the lineup. You know, he certainly is not a very good offensive player, but should help the team on the defensive end. But their wing depth, we knew, was going to be a major issue this season. And now that we're seeing Otto Porter being put on load management, which for a 26-year-old blows my mind, but we're seeing Otto Porter be put on load management. He's not going to play a ton of minutes in back-to-back games. I get it. It's probably in large part motivated because of the lack of their wing depth, and for whatever reason, Jim Boylan doesn't trust Denzel Valentine right now. Now, is it his conditioning? Is it his skill set? Is it a combination of it? Probably. But Denzel certainly offensively would be able to help out a certain extent, three-point shooting. But again, they've got like players that historically, career-wise, should be able to shoot the three and have been able to shoot the three. It's just that right now, collectively, they're just not doing it. Like, so to give you an idea, through five games, so through this 1-4 start, Otto Porter is shooting just under 24% from three. Mm-hmm. Luke Cornette is shooting 23.1% from three. Laurie Markkanen is shooting 21.2% from three. These are arguably your three best perimeter shooters outside of Denzel. Certainly your three best perimeter shooters that are getting the bulk of the heavy minutes in the rotation. And so for all three of those guys to be that bad, you're right. Like, just hit a couple more threes, and you're probably at the minimum 3-2 right now.
Yeah. And back to what you said about the defense, what really frustrates me, first of all, you're absolutely 100% right. I've always believed in kind of like the Golden State switch everything. Houston does that too, but I think Golden State did it to a much, you know, obviously a more successful effect. And the Bulls, the only way you wouldn't do that, if you're, let's say, Atlanta, and you could take advantage of like a Trae Young and you can't switch, the Bulls have a 6'7 point guard. They have height all from 1 through 5. You can get away with switching. And I don't understand why they're so reluctant to do it. It's maddening. I wish they would ask that question. Like, somebody asked that question. Why are you so insistent on guarding the pick and roll that way when it's obviously killing us? Have you ever discussed switching? And if not, why? What's the reasoning behind it? What do you think Jim would say to that?
That is a good question. That's something that I think he's going to be asked very, very soon here, if not at practice on Thursday, possibly shoot around on Friday. I would say that they believe that double-teaming the ball handler on the pick and rolls is what they think will make them succeed and is the best defensive scheme they have. And maybe they're right once everyone on the back end and the rest of the team buys in and learns it and executes it properly. Maybe. But I'm with you. Like, at what point do you go, this isn't working? We got to change it. Like, is it after 5 games? Is it after 10? Is it after 20? Because quite frankly, if it's after 20 games, and you are, God forbid, 5-15 or something even close to that, you know, proximity, we're in big time of trouble. And I think, you know, like, getting back to like the overall theme right now, part of the huge frustration with the fan base is they put it out there on day one of training camp that they believed they were going to contend for a playoff spot. That they put it out, Boylan put it out there, Paxton put it out there, they wanted to be a playoff team. That was the goal, they believe they have the players for it, and here we are at 1-4. And it's not like their 4 losses are to just Toronto and, you know what, they lost a road game in Philly and we lost a home game to Boston and
the Lakers,
they lost a tough road game in either of the L.A. team, right? Like, at that point, you're like 1-4, you're like, you know, it's the Alonzo Mourning gif. You're shaking your head and going, yeah, I understand that, right? I can see where that's coming from. But when your losses are to not just Toronto in the home opener, which coming off a season in which you only won 9 home games is tough to swallow in itself, but I get it. Toronto and Siakam were playing really well. They didn't regress as much as we thought, losing Kawhi. Well, those other 3 losses are to Charlotte, who may be the worst team in the league.
The Knicks, and the Cavs.
I mean, my God, that's the thing. Like, that's the biggest, like, thing is, you're 1-4 against these teams. Like, what's going to happen in 2 weeks when they play the Lakers? And they, my God, they've got the Pistons on Friday, which is not certainly going to be an easy game. Like, there's no single game on this schedule that you can go, they should win that game. I mean, even the Wizards, who I thought were going to be complete trash this year, lost a historic game against the Houston Rockets, the regulation 159-158 game. And so, the Wizards aren't that bad. And so, like, there is no team on the schedule you're going to go. And I mean, even including the Suns, there's no team on the schedule. Because the Suns, guess what, are playing a lot better basketball under Monty Williams than people thought were possible. There's no team on the schedule you go, you know what, that's an easy game. There are no easy games for this team.
Yeah, you know what? I still can't help but feeling, though, and Kevin, I think you probably would agree, I felt like we were better than all those teams. Even when we were playing, when the game was going on, I'm like, the Bulls are a better team. They're better than these guys. Like, that's what's so frustrating to me is I do feel like we should be a 7th or 8th seed. And we have more talent than Charlotte. We have more talent than the Knicks. We have all the Cavs tonight. I mean, if you look at both rosters, I think 29 out of 30 GMs would prefer the Bulls roster, yet we're losing in these fashions are just so frustrating. Let's get a little bit into, though, you know, Hutch is coming back. What do you?
Well, let me ask you this, Fred. Let me ask you. I want to follow up on what you just said. So on the morning of October 23rd, you would have felt like they are a better team and that they were 7th or 8th seed. how are you feeling now? Do you still feel that way after five games?
I would say deep down, I still feel they're a playoff team. Like, I think they're so talented that I think they're going, and this is what you see with talented young teams, is they'll often alternatively, you know, like the 04-05 Bulls started out 0-9 and won 47 games. Like, suddenly they'll be just like beating really good teams. And I think we're going to have moments this year where the Bulls will go on a winning streak against some really good teams because they're deep. They have a lot of depth, and a lot of teams are with the load management. They're talent rich, but only in the top five. All the best teams have, I think, who are paying an incredible amount to the best players, are not deep teams. So the Bulls, I think, will get a couple wins against good teams. But my frustration is, I really believe this, is there's a little bit, I know Boylan's taken a lot of heat, and rightly so, right? He hasn't been perfect. But like I said, it comes down to Otto, Lori, and Sato hitting big shots, just hitting wide open jumpers, and suddenly yeah. We have a different record, you know. And I'm also been very disappointed in Levine. I know you kind of I think defended him, and he's had he had a great game in our win at Memphis, but I felt like his fourth quarters he's had really questionable decision making. Some, especially against Charlotte, were really awful. In a game we had a 10-point lead, we should have never lost that game. I know Dunn got a lot of heat, but part of the reason we were up by 10 was because of his defense and White's, you know, to bring us up to 10 there. And I think Dunn's been fine as a backup point guard. I don't understand why he's getting a lot of heat. You know, I think he's played really well defensively. But, like, to me, the guys that matter are Lori and Levine, and they're just not doing it.
Planted my flag on Levine Island. I'm gonna die on that hill.
Crowded, though.
Like, at least in the near term, like I honestly, if you go through the top 10 issues with this team right now, Levine's not in my top 10.
He had no free throws. Like, that's a problem.
He's not getting to the line. Yes, he's not getting the line like he should. He's also not getting calls like he probably should either.
True.
He certainly had the 37-point game, which he did get to the free throw line, and that was a big reason why he had that output. But like getting back to, like, yes, they are certainly, like last year, they're going to have like a win over the Spurs that's going to shock people and going to say, oh, you know what? Maybe this team's not so bad. They'll have like what they did last February with after the Otto trade, and we had Otto at his peak apparently, and they played really well, and Laurie playing really well. But like, you look at the near term, so we know they're 1-4. Their next five games are against Pistons, Pacers, Lakers, Hawks, and Rockets.
So I think, well, only
what, one. What are they in those five games?
I think they could go 3-2 in those games. I think.
Oh, well, you're back up being optimistic.
How have the Pistons impressed you? They've been terrible for the most part. The Pacers they hadn't won a game. Did they win tonight? I'm not sure. They were 0-3. You know, so the Hawks are, you know, they're a good team. Well, they're young and up and coming, but they're like us. They're going to have a lot of off. Just the Lakers and the Rockets, I think, are going to be really hard to win. But I guess let me throw that back to you. Do you feel like is it now? We're done after five games? We're not going to make the
playoffs? No, not at all. Well, first of all, did Derrick Rose drop 40 on Friday? He probably does, right?
That's a good question. I hope he does, but I hope the Bulls still win. I think it's entirely possible, too. Yeah. I think the
best case scenario is Rose drops 40 and the Bulls win.
Yes, yes.
That's the best case. That's what everybody would like to see. No, see, there's still hope. So let me play my own devil's advocate here, right? So it's very frustrating to be the 1-4 start, but I don't think, like, I'm not going out saying this team is trash. I think this team still has talent. It still has depth. It still has a good roster of players that need to put it together at the same time. And it's frustrating because you have a healthy roster, relatively, right, for main key players outside of certainly Hutch. But you certainly have a healthy roster. You had a healthy training camp. You had an entire training camp to put in this new system with this new staff. And you get into it, and things aren't starting the way you would like, even close to the way you would like. But at the same time, like, I still think they could turn things around. Like, this is five games does not make a season. Like, five games doesn't put you in, top four in the lottery. They could certainly do it. It's just right now, you've got this uphill climb you have to make, and the schedule, given what their first five games is, it makes every game tough. And like Wendell Carter, after the game in Cleveland on Wednesday, he put it perfectly. He said, "We got too caught up in being a playoff team. We just need to win games." Yeah. He's right. Like, I think they got two in their heads, like, starting to maybe don't believe the hype a little bit. Like, they needed a little public enemy in the Discman player, right? They need don't believe the hype. And I think they got caught up in the hype a little bit collectively, maybe even individually. I mean, how much of us, I don't want to hear another person, including myself, ask the question, can Levine be an all-star? Like, they just need to flat-out win games.
Yeah.
Like, that's all that matters right now. It's not about, you know, Zach and Laurie playing at the United Center on Sunday in mid-February. It's about this team winning games, and that's really all that matters. And you know, Wendell Carter said it right. He said, "We got too caught up in being a playoff team. We just need to win games." And he's got it 100%.
Well, yeah, nobody, even Zach, who's probably been our best player, no one's remotely playing at an all-star level. I think, actually, Wendell Carter's probably been our most consistent best player. But, you know, like tonight, Levine, you know, 31 minutes, 6 of 14, 4-8 from 3, which is great. No free throws. He had 16 points. He had no rebounds. None. For a team that is, you know, offensively just getting crushed on the boards, he had zero rebounds. No defensive, no offensive rebounds. That's not an all-star performance, you know. When you have an all-star, you expect a guy in a situation like this where we desperately need a win to come out and just destroy. And like Bradley Beal, even though the Wizards lost tonight, I'm certain he must have had an insane evening. I saw a couple highlights earlier. And, you know, we just don't have any all-stars right now. It's just frustrating. And that's not to say that Zach can't turn this around. I do want to ask you, what do you think is going to happen now that Hutch is coming back with the rotation? What do you foresee happening here? Is it going to be Archie out? Who was my suggestion to go? He's a great story. He's just not talented or big enough. What say you?
So the question is, and this kind of gets back to the rotation that we've seen, like we have seen some unusual lineups. I think that's being fair. We've seen the backcourt of Kobe and Dunn and Zach LaVine play the three. We've seen Shaq Harrison play the three. We've seen Archie play the three. And those are not ideal. None of those players are ideally playing the small forward position. I don't care. I know it's positionless basketball. I get it. But at the same time, is that really the best spot for them to be playing in? I don't think it is. So the question is regarding Hutch is he probably, at least initially, will get limited minutes until he works his way up. But let's assume a fully conditioned Hutchinson, a fully healthy Hutchinson, is then your backup three. He's your backup to Otto. In terms of costing the minutes, I mean, yeah, I'd say Archie's probably the most likely one who's going to suffer because of that. He's the one who's probably going to have to hit, you know, the limited minutes aspect. As long as Hutchinson can be at least viable on the offensive end, which is where he struggles. He's not a particularly good shooter, but he certainly has the athleticism and the skill and the ability on defense that you would love to see, which certainly would help this team. But I think Archie and his 16 minutes that he got against the Cavs is probably going to get reduced significantly. I think Otto's load management will see an increase in what Hutch is getting. And, you know, Thad Young's playing decent. I don't think it's going to cost Thad Young minutes in the rotation. I don't think it's going to cost Kobe or Dunn minutes in the rotation. The only one that really makes sense right now is probably Archie.
Yep, I agree 100%. Yeah, and he has him playing at the three and just not big enough to do it at a high level. And like I said, the rebounding, one thing about Hutch, too, he can rebound very well, too, for his position. So I think that will significantly help. You know, we got to address the rebounding, and our big guys got to hit big shots. But, Kevin, I can't thank you enough for jumping on. We're at the 40-minute mark. I'd like to get, just before we go, I want to throw out one hypothetical here, and let's just say, God forbid, but we're a lottery team again. Let's say we're one of the worst five teams in the NBA. Do you feel that this will finally be it? Like, do you think this will be, they'll be forced to make a decision? Because, you know, I, for one, I'm C. Red Fred, and as I said before, I'm a huge fan of these guys and what they've done, but I'm absolutely feel that they've had a long enough run here, and if this goes south, we need to look in another direction. What say you?
So, like, let's throw out a win total, right? Because certainly, like, I had pegged them entering the season to win 37 games, which is not a playoff team. You're not going to get the 8th seed with 37 wins. But 37 wins would be a 15-game improvement over the 22 they had last season. And that is significant.
Yes.
It's absolutely significant. And that, to me, a 37-win performance, a 15-game improvement, would say, you know what, we're headed in the right direction. If they only end up with, let's say, 30, let's cut that in half and say they're only going to have an 8-game improvement, that's going to be disappointing. It's going to be disappointing to the entire fan base. It's going to be disappointing to the front office. It'll be disappointing to the coaching staff. Like, an 8-game improvement when you're going from 22 to 30 is not something to be proud of. It's not. Like, if you go from 40 to 48, yeah, you're doing something right. If you go from 45 to 53, yeah, hell yeah, you're doing something right. So if you only go from 22 to 30, like, you're still a lottery team. You're still back end of the lottery team. And so that if they were to finish with 30 wins, I think they would have to, from top to bottom, from Jerry and Michael on down, look at this entire organization and ask themselves, are we doing the right thing at every position? I mean, every position. I'm talking about front office, coaching staff, training staff, sixth man, 15th man. Like, you need to look at everything and say, is this working out? And so that is the question you need to answer. And then, you know, if they only win 30 games, I would say every position on the entire team would be up for change if that happens again. I mean, year three, this isn't like baseball, right?
Yeah.
Like a rebuild in baseball. And let's make the parallel to Jerry's other team, the White Sox. They just went through year three of their rebuild, and they are expecting, which hopefully they have a decent offseason and spend some cash, that they are going to, in year four, be a respectable contender for a playoff spot. In the NBA, you don't need 4 years to do that. Like, they have what we think have hit in the draft the last 3 years, though certainly it may not hit as the home run that we thought when it comes to Laurie and Wendell, and maybe even Kobe, because Kobe's regressed a little bit. If they were to only win 30 games and they've regressed that much, like, it's tough to swallow. Like, you look at it and you go, something's got to change. Something really has to change. Like, a three-year rebuild shouldn't take this long. It shouldn't take this long in the NBA to do that. So it's going to be a significant, like, in terms of what we're looking at, these next 20 games are going to tell us a tremendous amount about this team. Like, their first 25 games, the essentially the quarter mark of the season, just over the quarter mark of the season, that's going to tell us what this team is. So if they can't right the ship in 20 games, then, you know, they're not going to be able to recover. Certainly not going to be able to recover given what their schedule is in mid-March through the end of mid-April. It's a brutal schedule at that point.
Especially when you consider last year, all the injuries, they won 21 games. This team's relatively healthy. Like, you can have an excuse for with all the injuries that they had last year, but if we win 30 games with a healthy roster, relatively healthy roster, that is a full-fledged disaster.
And yeah, it is.
That would
it
require,
absolutely,
yeah, massive change, you know. And it was, and I, for one, would be absolutely shocked if they do nothing after a season like we're headed towards. But then again, it's 5 games, you know. Again, it's 1-4. It's been terrible so far, but I think we're both in agreement. I'm not ready yet to throw a towel on the team, but
I'm not ready to sell this team under right now and start trade. Like, I've seen people suggest, well, just trade Zach and Laurie now. Like, no, like, come, like, it's five games. Listen, it sucks what they've started and the teams they've lost to, because if all of a sudden you're losing to bad teams, like, you're probably a bad team yourself. But
yes,
if this same exact 5-game stretch were happening in mid-January, the scope and the impact would be a lot less. The fact that it happened to start the season is just a cause for concern, but I'm not ready to completely throw in the damn towel, as they say.
Kevin, you always bring it, and even your bomb on my tortured soul tonight. Balm, not
we,
Bob.
We have to have a support group, right?
exactly, man. But hey, tell us what we can look forward to. Anything you're working on? Oh, I do have to say, too, I know I mentioned I had an article. I'm really glad I didn't give you that article. I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to wait until after the next game. I don't even want to show you what this article was about.
Well, give me the headline. Give me the headline of what the article was.
It just was basically, I think it was called Come Together, and it was just basically a plea for all the non-believers to get on board the bus, and, you know, just it basically outlined all the reasons why there's so much negativity, and already I'm just disgusted with everybody jumping off. With a 1-2 record.
Fred, I say keep that article in your back pocket right now. Don't hit publish on that bad boy just yet. let's keep that one when they write the ship and they're 15-5. Then you can submit that and be accurate with that article. But you know, now as they say, too soon right now,
yes,
for that one.
Yes.
Now, in terms of like what's coming up on NBC Sports Chicago, we certainly are looking forward to Derrick Rose's return to the United Center. No, it's not his first one since he left the Bulls, but it certainly is always emotional for the fan base. It's something we look forward to every time he comes and plays the Bulls, whether it's home or road. So we'll have a ton of coverage from Derrick. We hope to hear from him on Thursday with the Pistons practicing at the United Center on Thursday. And certainly, I just want to always say, the Outsiders are amazing. Matt, John, and Dave are fantastic, and they bring, you talk about bringing it, they bring it every single show. And so I would say, if you get a chance, you can listen to their podcast, which is the show itself, in case you missed it, or watch the show live on Twitter or on YouTube, which we started and relaunched our NBC Sports Chicago YouTube page. And there's some fantastic stuff, some like long form stuff being put on a YouTube page, so I highly recommend you check that out. And so
awesome.
Let's just hope that the Bulls turn it around for everyone's sake, including my own sanity and our Bulls content team here at NBC Sports Chicago, because we desperately, desperately need a competitive Bulls team this year.
Oh, so do I, because I'll be on Bulls Outsiders in Game 23. Can you imagine the questions from Australia that we'll be getting? If the team,
not even that, but I can't imagine the fire that Matt Peck is going to bring your direction if they're remotely playing at the same level they have through five games.
I might have to wear a helmet for that show.
Like an asbestos suit and a helmet, and our good friend Big Dave is just going to sit there eating popcorn and enjoying the whole thing.
Oh, great. All right, brother. Kevin, it's always great to talk to you. Your Twitter handle, I know most people have it, but just in case there's couple people don't have it yet.
Yeah, it's Kevin _NBCS. So I tweet about the Bulls and Star Wars mainly. That's 90% of my tweets. Sometimes I literally tweet about both those things at the same time. Like after the 3-1 start, it just like popped in my head the great scene in Revenge of the Sith in which Obi-Wan is just like he had just struck down Anakin, and he's so emotional. And he says to Anakin, "You are the chosen one," right? And so, like, I tweeted, it hit my head. I'm like, "You were supposed to be 3-1, not 1-3. It was said you would bring balance to the Eastern Conference, not the lottery." And so sometimes I get to combine my two loves, the Star Wars and the Bulls, into one thing, and it resonates. But right now, we are more like, we don't have the high ground. Let me put it that way. We are Anakin on the low ground, and we're about to jump at Obi-Wan, and that's how I feel as a Bulls fan right now.
Just one more minute of questions to that end, since you brought it up. Are you more excited about Mandalorian or the Rise of Skywalker?
Well, I'm absolutely super ecstatic about both. I am more excited, if you have to make me choose, about the Rise of Skywalker, because it's the end of essentially a 10, I mean, honestly, 11 films, if you include Solo and Rogue One, in that mix. I mean, it's the end of a dynasty. It's the end of an era. And so I just cannot wait to see how they tie it up, of how the Emperor ties into everything, of what they're going to do with Rey and Kylo, and how they say goodbye to Leia in an impactful and meaningful way. So I cannot wait for that. But I will say I am absolutely geeked for The Mandalorian. And one of the reasons I am, like, totally geeked for it is, I don't know if you're aware of this, they are not making Episode 1 of The Mandalorian available for screening to critics. And the reason is they said there is a massive spoiler in the first episode that has impact across the entire Star Wars landscape. We're not just talking just for The Mandalorian, that there is a massive spoiler that occurs in Episode 1. And Disney has said they are not making Episode 1 available for pre-screening because they don't want the fan base, anyone, to have it spoiled ahead of time.
Oh, my God.
So, like, just knowing that, I'm like, my God, what could it possibly be? I've got, like, some slight theories on it, but I cannot wait to see it. And, like, November 12th, when it hits the stream and it's out there, I'll be watching with popcorn.
I cannot wait, man. That's one thing I'm looking forward to in addition to talking Bulls with you, is talking Star Wars, because I'm
always
a friend, too. All right, my man. Great talking to you, Kevin. Have a great evening, brother, and thank you so much for your time. You always bring it, and this, you, as I said before, you brought me a lot of solace tonight. Thank you so much, my man.
Keep the faith, Fred. Keep the faith. At least for like 10 more games. Okay. If we get them 25 games, and they're 5-25, there is no faith. Keep the faith right now.
I might have to go down to the dark side if things get really bad, and you don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. My family doesn't want to see that. Ricky O'Donnell.
By the way, our good friend Ricky O'Donnell, like, it was like the tale of two tweets. Before the game, and even slightly during the game, he was giving the front office credit. Like, he really liked what Thad Young was doing. Like, he was glowing about it. If you look at Ricky's tweets after the game, it is the Palpatine dark side, chosen one Ricky, just bringing his heat and fire. So, like, in a span of 3 hours, Ricky went full Anakin to the dark side.
Somebody suggested Jason, if he won't turn to the dark side, maybe Jason Pat will or something. I love it.
Oh,
I'm back
good.
And read it. All right, brother. Take it easy, my
good
man.
Good talk to you, Fred.
All right. Bye-bye.